Welcome to a brand new episode of the Football Corner, Manchester's very own home for all things football. My name is Vikram.
My name is Shreyas.
If you guys are new or old, you can catch us wherever you get your podcasts, Google, Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, CastBox, and more.
And don't forget to follow us on all social media. That's at Mancho Podcast.
So today, Shreyas, we have a pretty interesting episode lined up. We are going to be talking about updates from the world of football, after which we're going to jump to something that you are pretty excited about. We have created individually our Chelsea team of the 2000s, and then we're going to most likely end up arguing about whose team is better and why.
Can we just call it Chelsea team of the century so far? So that's Chelsea.
Can we just call it Chelsea's best team ever? Because I don't know if there was anything better before this. I'm sorry.
Subtle, not as subtle as you thought, but fine. I mean,
I'm not meant to be subtle at all. I'm meant to be a cheap shot at you. Right. But yeah, that's what we're doing. So before we get to that, FIFA just released an advisory about how the association should be navigating the transfer window. So they've said that transfer window should have been open right now if everything would have played out normally. But given the postponement of the season, FIFA has essentially said that associations are free to open the transfer window even during the ongoing season. So, for example, football's about to start now, a lot of places in June, and by July we'll be in full swing. So they've essentially said that associations' basis of decisions they make on their own can start the summer transfer window, for example, in July if they want to. So they've essentially given an advisory, and now it's up to the associations to kind of figure out individually or coming together and deciding when they want to do it. Because I think a lot of people, especially I'm assuming the FA, is probably going to be keen on making sure the transfer window runs across Europe the same date, so they can avoid what happened last season.
Right.
So that's where we're at with the FA, with the FIFA announcement. Now, in terms of updates regarding specific associations, the Italian league has already said that there will be no transfer business during the ongoing season. And they've included the UEFA competitions as well. So we know that most of these leagues are aiming to finish by July end, so that the teams and the leagues can focus completely on the UEFA competitions, which is the Champions League and the Europa League, all across August, which, like we spoke about in the last episode, I think is a great decision, just so that it just becomes this Euro-style knockout tournament, which is going to be pretty cool to watch. So the Italian League has already said that they want to do that transfer window after the UEFA Champions League and the UEFA Europa League ends, which is, they've given tentative dates already for September 1st to October 5th. Now, it remains to be seen if everyone else is going to follow suit. The only update we have is that the FA CEO has already said that they will not have any transfer business at least till the end of the domestic season, which means till the end of July. Now, they might open it in August, or they might just take a cue from Italy and open it on September 1st. I feel like they're all talking right now. They're all trying to figure out a common date, which is going to be beneficial for all of them. Otherwise, this hodgepodge of having one league start at one point and the other league starting at another point, especially given how closely the ending of the season and the starting of next season are connected, it's going to become a mess, man.
Yep, it's getting more and more messy the more we talk about it. But I think the only thing I see happening as a... So I think one thing that the Premier League specifically, or the English FA specifically, that they want to avoid is... with last season, they shut their window, I think a couple of weeks or maybe more earlier than the rest of Europe. And that did lead to some very weird situations. Case in point, you know, the whole Eriksen Poch saga at Spurs. And we saw how it affected, you know, the team and stuff. However, this time with, you know, Project Restart and everything else also resuming, UEFA competitions coming back, I think... Even if the FA or the Premier League decides to open it sooner or before September, I think it'll still end relatively close to a similar date, or maybe the exact same date, which will be literally the last day, or basically the day after that will be the next season starting. So I'm sure that all leagues will want to keep that as the end date. Maybe, you know, one country over the other might start sooner or later, all of that jazz. But at least we'll all start on time. And I hope they are looking at a solution like that.
Yeah, it gets really tough, man, especially given how much more business happens in the last two weeks of the window. For the Premier League to shut their window at least like 15 days before everyone else led to a lot of complications, like you mentioned. I think Ericsson's the biggest example of that. So they're probably going to be looking for a unified sort of transfer window here just to make sure that everything else that's going on and how sort of hand-to-mouth this whole transition is going to be. If they have that issue of having a shorter transfer window than all the other leagues and then have players leave, that's going to become a big, big problem. Especially now because, you know, they don't have the budgets and we're going to probably see a lot of player swap plus cash deals as opposed to just pay 70 million deals for players and stuff like that. So I'm pretty curious to see how it happens. I was waiting for some update in terms of what the transfer window is going to look like just because these rumors and confirmed potential, etc. transfers are just going through the roof and with no sort of indication on when the window is going to be. I think it was just getting to this point where it was just unfathomable and unbelievable. So I'm glad that there's this clarification. I can totally see maybe in the next few days all these leaks coming out with a confirmed date. I'm assuming they'll spend the weekend, talk to each other, figure out what that thing is going to look like. But the fact that the Italian FA said these dates concretely, which kind of makes sense. September 1st is when there will be no football. And October 5th, I mean, that's a normal transfer window to have a month and a week, essentially. So maybe all the other leagues will just follow suit and just choose those as the transfer dates. So remains to be seen what happens there. One particular player... Happy Shreyas, huh? One particular player that kind of dominated headlines, surprisingly.
Dominating.
It's not been Neymar, if you're that's what you're guessing.
Present has continuous.
Been, yeah, has been... did you say present continuous tense?
Oh, yeah, why? What did I get wrong?
I never got a good grasp on these types of tenses, so I'm just super impressed you said that. just, getting back to the point, it's Timo Werner. Now, Timo Werner
Turbo,
for...
Turbo Timo Werner, please.
Turbo Timo Werner. I'm so sorry. For the better part of maybe a year and a half was linked to Liverpool, or a year at least. And All of a sudden, Liverpool's basically said that they are not interested at all. Just because there's no money there, surprisingly.
Right.
Chelsea, which didn't participate voluntarily and involuntarily for two windows, and sold Hazard and a bunch of other stuff, business before that, has a massive war chest. And they have seemingly taken over this Timo Werner coming to the Premier League debate. And it seems pretty probable that he's now going to be coming to Chelsea. If Chelsea are to be believed, he's already a Chelsea player. If Leipzig are to be believed, there's been no contact. And then everything else in between, it feels like he's going to Chelsea. So now that there's this news on the transfer window and dates and stuff like that, I feel like those rumors or talks are going to get to a point where they're going to become reality pretty soon. So how excited are you, dude? I mean, apart from the obvious.
I mean, first of all, this is very old news. Like, Werner's extremely old news. Let's talk about Havertz. We'll talk about Havertz in the next episode. But long story short, what I know of the Werner situation before I give you Chelsea's perspective or a Chelsea fan's perspective. So he was supposed to go to Munich. And Munich was shaking things up a little bit. The coach shuffling. Robin and Ribery and a lot of these senior players going out, they almost had a rebuild. And it was very similar to Germany's 2018 World Cup situation where Timo Werner did start every group game. He didn't get a single goal and didn't have the best output or definitely performance. So, at club level, he's still doing well enough. He did well enough at Stuttgart, gets a transfer to Leipzig when Stuttgart got eliminated. And he's doing relatively well there. And then this Munich move falls apart because Munich, as kick-ass as Juventus is with getting these free transfers and doing transfer business, I think Munich comes a close second because...
I think in terms of just like being prudent and spending wisely, there's no one who beats Bayern Munich.
Absolutely. So for whatever reason, you know, whether they weren't happy with the player or they weren't ready as a club, as a transfer policy or whatever, you know, things just didn't work out. And maybe he was given the idea, the notion that we look into this, you know, next season, which is, you know, right now, which is this summer. And he's had a shift in, not in role, but I think he's evolved and he's become extremely mature with such a fantastic tactician in Julian Nagelsmann, with the Leipzig story. I mean, not just him. We have Upamecano and, you know, a bunch of other players. It's just a great, you know, story. And they're currently sitting in third and making it for the Champions League next year as well. So now what happens is that, you know, Liverpool starts to become part of the news world over, you know, continuous Champions League finals. They finally win it. Super close to winning the league, definitely winning the league. So on all fronts, Liverpool is literally that train is chugging along, you know, like there's no tomorrow. And then you think about, you know, Jurgen Klopp and his involvement with the Bundesliga. He knows Werner extremely well. He's kept in touch with him a lot. And they were supposed to do a deal in Jan. And Leipzig just decided that, no, we're going to wait for the summer, because that's where the whole transfer clause or sort of thing happened. Because when the move to Munich collapsed, they got him to sign a new contract. They're paying him, I think he's one of the most handsomely paid, you know, people in that squad. And they put this transfer value at him that it's going to be, you know, 54, 55 million pounds up to July 15th, not June 15th. And if no club, you know, is willing to meet that clause, then his value goes much, much higher after that. So it's almost caving in into, you know, I mean, honestly, he can't disturb that front three of Liverpool. We know that. We know that he'll probably be like a Bernardo Silva was to Guardiola probably two, three years ago, coming on as a sub, coming on as an impact sub, doing his thing. And then now eventually not just replacing Silva, but almost being like a Silva 2.0. So maybe he saw Werner in a similar, you know, way, where they only have Origi to sort of figure out that front three bit, and then he could add that to the mix. Because with Werner's role, he's not a target man, he's not a number nine. He likes to roam around a little bit, plays on the right wing, but then shifts to the left wing. And his biggest asset is his speed. So, I mean, incredibly fond of Klopp, incredibly fond of, you know, what's happening at Liverpool, incredibly wanting to join the best league in the world. Now, with this situation, with 2020, with everything that's going on, Project Restart, etc., apparently, FSB, the owners of Liverpool, they said that we want to make the club self-sufficient and depending on its own resources in terms of profit and loss and within FFP, etc., etc. So they simply said that in this current scenario, there is no chance we can expect to pay that kind of money for someone who will not be a guaranteed first teamer. And that makes sense, because you don't want to disturb the Firmino, Mane, Salah. You don't want to disturb this project maturity that Klopp has been doing for the last, you know, 3-4 years. Is he one for the future? 100%. He's 24 years old. He's just about discovering his prime or his peak, and he should be able to maintain it for at least a good 3-4 years before his speed, you know, wanes off and he'll become a smarter player, all of that stuff. So when this happens, apparently, you know, United were interested with him. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer spoke to him in Jan as well. There were a couple of other clubs interested as well. But when it came to this, and literally Werner tells Leipzig that, look, Liverpool's my first choice, let's talk to them first. And then Leipzig tells him, oh, by the way, they're not willing to pay that money. And that's not negotiable at all. In fact, we want to increase it, you know, in the coming weeks, if no one wants to pick you up. And he's like, okay, fine, let's listen to some other offers. And Chelsea were one among four in total, that were willing to match that price. And then, you know, Lampard and Cech sort of step in. Lampard has had two lengthy phone calls with him.
Apparently they went and met him.
Yes, I mean, so what we know is that Marina Granovskaya, she has a trusty lawyer who's based out of Luxembourg, and he was representing Chelsea's interests in person to figure out the release clause and all of that stuff. But yeah, we know that Werner and Lampard have been super in touch.
I still have a question. So you said July 15th is when his release clause goes increases. Up.
Yes.
So if these if the German League and the FA, the English Premier League, also decide to have the transfer window start in August or even in September,
right,
then what does that mean? Do they have to pay more for Werner, or is there a way for them to acquire him at this release cost price? How does that work?
Right. So what essentially Chelsea did was they were probably interested in considering their options in Jan, which is how, you know, Zayek happened, you know, a little later. I believe contact was established, or at least the discussion became super serious between Feb and March, which is when they started to reach out to Werner and be like, look, we can very much meet that clause. Now we have to talk about personal role and team and structure and all that stuff. So, and that's the thing I understand from how transfer windows work, is that in terms of the actual signing of the contract, in terms of the player moving from former club to current club, that happens within the window. But essentially what Chelsea has done is that they've just told Leipzig, we will pay you that money and we are guaranteeing it, and we'll sign on a paper saying we will pay that money as soon as the transfer window opens. And I'm sure there are counter clauses saying that if they're not able to pay, or for some reason decide not to pay, that's going to be some serious penalty, spoiling relationship, etc., etc. So as soon as the transfer window opens, Leipzig gets their money. I know it'll be staggered. He can finish. I mean, obviously, if the season is in June, July, and they're still playing football, or Leipzig makes it to the final of the Champions League, say, he will still represent Leipzig. He will still be a Leipzig player. And the second he's done with technically the 19-20 season, as soon as that's done, next flight out to London, I'm sure he's already house hunting. He's figured out a place next to the Cobham Training Center. And that's how it works, according to me.
Interesting. I'm curious to see how this one pans out, because it seems like he's leaving. So it's going to be interesting. I've also read reports about both parties not being able to come to a sort of an agreement or a process in terms of how the medical is going to happen because of the lockdown laws and all. They're literally talking as if he's a Chelsea player now, and literally only the medicals remaining. Yet today is when we heard for the first time that the transfer window is going to be happening in August or maybe September. So I'm curious to see how that works out. You seem pretty excited about that. Is he already in your Chelsea team of the 2000s?
I was super, super convinced, and I think I'll put him as a super sub for now. But okay. Another quickly to just round off the Werner situation. So it was very clear that his first preference was Liverpool. It was very clear his first preference was, you know, working with Klopp and wanting to join. Like, Liverpool is on a different level right now compared to everyone else, with obviously City somewhat close and other problems with them. But so his first concern with Lampard was that, oh, what if you get fired, you know, in the next 3 months? What if you guys don't make the Champions League?
Fair question.
Right. And
it's Chelsea, dude.
Yes. And Lampard has apparently given him assurances that come what may, he apparently has a 3-year plan with Chelsea. The first year is to rebuild. The second year is to challenge. And the third year is to finally win something. So right now we're in the challenge phase. We're almost finishing the rebuilding stage with players like Hakim Ziyech, Pulisic, Kovacic, you know, all of these guys come in, Werner. We're going to let go of a lot of senior people. We're going to let go of, you know, people on the periphery of the squad and stuff. So Lampard said, look, come what may, I have assurances from the board, from the owner himself, who's bankrolling so much of freaking money, it's insane, that, you know, that he's very much, you know, a part of this. And then with respect to his role, he can play on the wing. He can play in case Tammy is injured and then do, you know, a false nine or a target man. Giroud is there as well, and that's going to be fun to play off of him. I love the way Giroud used to connect with Hazard, you know, play those 1-2s, head the ball down, stuff like that. And Werner lives off of that. He just give him something to run at behind the lines. He's become super intelligent. I remember seeing Leipzig's last game, which unfortunately they drew to a 10-man Paderborn or something, where even Upamecano had a terrible game. And even though they had a terrible game, he was very much involved. He got the assist. He missed some easy chances. But I could see the difference from last season to this season when we saw him with the World Cup and now under Julian Nagelsmann for such a long time, that he's finally starting to not just you know, talk, but like, yeah, he's literally walking the talk right now, and it's going to be a serious challenge for him to fit into the Premier League and Chelsea and Lampard. So I cannot wait.
Yeah, no, I agree, dude. He's a top player. In fact, now that you mentioned it, optically, intuitively rather, it feels like he's going to be a better pairing with Giroud than Tammy, because Giroud is excellent at 1-2s, and like you said, he works off of those 1-2s pretty well. So it's going to be pretty interesting to see him at Chelsea. I think it's going to reduce a lot of potential game time for some good talent you guys have on the wings. So that's going to be a little bothersome, I guess, for you. You have Pulisic and then the Hudson-Odois and the aging Williams and Pedros if they stay or if they don't. So there's a lot of talent you guys have on the wings already. So there will be one less position there. So that's going to be bad. But yeah, I'm pretty excited to see wherever he goes and how that happens. I'm just super curious to see when and how that happens. So yeah, without further ado, let's jump to this. Our Chelsea team of the decades. Now, how we've done this is we've picked a manager essentially from the last 20 years who we think represents Chelsea best. And basis of how that manager would set up the team is how we've set up our team. And then we picked players from the past 20 years. Obviously, nothing blue sky where, for example, I don't know, Drogba is playing CDM or something. I don't know how that will be feasible. But like a player usually playing in a position that they played when they were playing for Chelsea, but within a setup of the manager that we've chosen. I don't think it's going to be a big surprise in terms of the manager that both of us chose, the most successful Chelsea manager ever, and definitely the most successful Chelsea manager in the past 20 years, Jose Mourinho, unless, Shreyas, you picked someone else.
No, man. I mean, he was already the self-christened, self-baptized special one, and he brought some of that specialty to the bridge. And
in both terms, I would say, yeah. He won a decent haul of trophies both terms, so definitely... Absolutely. Definitely a pick there. And Jose's, I've gone with his standard 4-3-3. What about you?
Interesting. No, so basis the players I have and who all I wanted to fit in and stuff, this is not a typical Jose formation, but I know with these...
Already breaking the rules.
I mean, no, come on, you give these players to Jose and I show him this draft of mine and he'll be like, it's good, you could be special. So,
but I play 4-3-3. that's how it's going to end. All right, so why don't you go first? Tell me what your 4-2-3-1, 4-3-1-2. I don't even know what it is.
I've got a 3-5-2.
Jose Mourinho never plays a 3-5-2. I feel like we've spoken about this. Oh my God.
So maybe
blasphemy. How do you park a bus with 3-5-2, dude?
That's the whole thing, right? Like, this is the best of Jose, the best of...
Are you sure you didn't pick Conte? I feel like you picked Conte as your manager, made your team, and then you realize that it has to be Jose, so you're just, like, forcing Jose into it.
I mean, I know. Look, if Conte would have stayed for a good 5-10 years, won a couple of Champions League, made these signings, sure, why not?
All right, so I'm just going to pretend it's a Conte team. But it's 3-5-2.
I mean, for someone who's a UA fan, sure, like whatever, floats your boat, go ahead.
All right. Let's hear it out.
Yeah, so I've got a 3-5-2. I'm going to talk about the obvious people that are already in. Czech, obviously, there's no second option there. Don't need to say anything about it. My defense, I've got Terry as a center back. And a reason why I went with the three is because I honestly couldn't think of who I would want to partner him with. I thought of Carvalho. I thought of some other decently, successful center backs at Chelsea. And honestly, no one came to mind. So I left Terry alone. When it came to right back and left back, it was obviously, Ivanovic and Cole. And when I fit them in the three, I'll tell you how I worked that out. In terms of the five midfield,
So before you jump ahead, your back three in a 3-5-2.
Yeah.
Is Cole, you have a left back and a right back.
so here's the thing. Ivanovic used to play center back as well. So he makes sense. But
Cole, not in Chelsea.
But I know Cole doesn't, and I've got cover for him. So I've got that taken care of.
Okay. I'll reserve my comments till I hear everything out. Yeah. Because I already have a bunch.
Sure. in midfield, I just absolutely had to put Kante, although I really, really wanted to put McAlealy. But just because I think Makelele had already enjoyed his peak and then just enjoyed like the sort of, you know, summiting that peak, and then on his way down, so he was already, you know, happy that he's on, you know, reached the top, he's summited and he's looking down and it's going to be chill. He's probably rolling down the mountain, and that's what he did with Chelsea. He did it with so much of ease, probably, which is even more compliment to him, that it honestly didn't look like, you know, the effect that he had or what he used to do with France or what he used to do with Real Madrid. So, which is why I think I had to put Kante in, because Kante is a little more versatile, although I still think his best position is that holding midfield. And he doesn't spread the ball, but he breaks attacks and then quickly gathers the ball, rescues the ball, and then just starts, you know, just an easy pass and like, yeah, you guys do the running. I've got the ball and I'll run behind you. So, and this is where, again, Kante comes in, because Kante is also going to help Terry either become a second centre-back on counter-attacks, or he's going to help on the left side if Cole's having a hard time. And then, again, the two midfielders ahead of Kante to make that triangle, I have Essien on the left and Lampard on the right. So, okay. Essien is my box-to-box. Lampard is the ultimate midfielder, I think, for all time. So, again, Essien will give that cover to Cole. Essien and Kante together can, you know, take care of that left side. And we have Lampard in case, you know, shit's really hitting the fan and he can help out. And then on the wings, I have Hazard and Robin. Oh, my God. And I chose to keep Robin on the right wing, and I kept him as an inverted winger just because of his typical cutting in and that pass shot to goal. Which he just seems to do like a freaking cheat code. It's almost like that finesse shot on FIFA. And obviously when he's cutting in, then Ivanovic can, you know, I don't want to say bulldoze down that right side, because then Terry will be left alone. But that's what I hope Lampard, Essien and Kante can
help. That's the problem of having a right back and a left back in your back three. That's why you have three center backs in your back three, so that your left back and your right back can be wing backs. But you chose to make Eden Hazard as your left wing back. And who? I've already forgot. Arjen Robben is your right wing back. Oh my God.
And you got to listen to my friend too. It's Drogba and Costa.
Costa?
Bro, Costa was an absolute beast. Like, he was there for only two seasons, but...
I feel like that's a big factor. There's so many players that I didn't include in the team just because they weren't or haven't been in the team that long, or like the reasoning which you gave to Makelele, which right. I have some thoughts about, but like they were sort of the near end of their career. So, right. I mean, I think Drogba's best years have been his before and after spell at Atletico. He had one great season at Chelsea.
Yes.
And then I think everything else was kind of mediocre until it fell off. Right. Okay, so just to recap, you have Cech, you have Ashley Cole, Terry, Branislav Ivanovic.
Yes.
I'm going left to right, just yeah. So that you didn't know. Eden Hazard, Michael Essien, Makelele.
No, Kante.
Lampard. Oh, sorry, Kante, Lampard, and then Arjen Robben.
Right.
And then you have Drogba and Costa up front.
No, Costa's on the left, Drogba's on the right, because Lampard and Drogba have to be on the same side, because they were of just course. Telepathic, yeah.
Friends, huh? Okay. Dude, my team's going to decimate your team.
Like, see, my team is going to probably...
Can you at least save some blushes and say this is an Antonio Conte team and not a Jose Mourinho? Mourinho will not know what to do with this team.
I mean, yeah, okay, why not? As long as my team beats your ass. My team will outscore your team, 100%.
Your team will out nothing my team. Okay, let's just talk about my team. All right, it's a Jose Mourinho team. It's a standard 4-3-3. Uh-huh. Jose Mourinho, in fact, I think his first stint at Chelsea he's the one who popularized the 4-3-3, because it was very standard 4-4-2. Yes. That was his means then. And right. His 4-3-3 was meant to break build up play and any team that's sort of trying to counter Jose's team with a 4-4-2. Right. Is built up from the back with a 4-3-3 was meant to break that. Yeah, so and that's why 4-3-3 became so popular, and then it's kind of still a norm, like various versions of 4-3-3 essentially.
Yeah.
So I think like to do a Jose Mourinho 4-3-3 team, if we're talking about Chelsea from the 2000s, I think there's nothing better, because that's kind of what laid the groundwork for that.
Right.
So Peter Cech, obviously, at the back.
Right.
No one else even comes close.
Yep.
So for my center backs, I have John Terry, and I have someone you mentioned. I have Ricardo Carvalho.
Nice. That makes sense.
And yeah, so I think William Gallas was the only one in my books who kind of came close. I'm not counting David Luiz here. And a lot of this has a lot to do with personal preference as well in terms of who I like and who I don't like, right? So I think Carvalho was...
Also, Luiz is like an Arsenal player and they're not even renewing his contract. So, yeah.
I mean, he still had two fairly successful stints at Chelsea. I mean, just the number of games he's played, that's a lot, right? But I think Carvalho is a very intelligent player.
Yes.
He was in pretty good touch when he came to Chelsea.
Yeah.
I think by the time he left, he was kind of out of it. So I think he did pretty well there. William Gallas, I think just the fact that he's played more games for Arsenal than Chelsea just doesn't make sense for him to be in that Chelsea lineup. I think Carvalho's great, so I loved him. On my right back, I have Ivanovic. I agree with everything that you said and more. Absolutely scary player.
Yes.
And a very fair player. Yes. And a great outside shot whenever it's needed, right?
Right.
On my left back, now this is something that I wish to clarify. I have not picked Ashley Cole. And that's only because I've picked Azpilicueta there. Now,
Why would you do that?
Firstly, I think Azpilicueta greater than Ashley Cole as a defender.
Really?
And the other thing is that even though Aspi, when he did come to Chelsea, was a right back by trade, but he was kind of subbing for Ivanovic.
Yes.
Because Ivanovic was the starting right back. And then when Mourinho came back for his second term, he started playing him as left back because that's when Ashley Cole was kind of fading away.
Right.
And he spent a bulk of his first few years at Chelsea as a left back until that Conte season where he set three at the back and then he started playing as the right centre back.
Yes.
So to me, Azpilicueta over Ashley Cole any day. I mean, absolutely. Really? Ashley Cole is like probably the best English left back ever.
That's exactly what I was just going to say, that he's considered the best left back ever. And then
English left back. He's not the best
English
left back ever. Yeah. I think Azpilicueta is a massive defender, dude. Just the fact that he plays a center back now. He was a right back by trade, but he played left back for Chelsea and was successful at everything. Just, I mean, come on. No shot, right? So that's my back four. For my mid three, now I have Michael Essien and Lampard for the same reasons that you mentioned. Obviously, I mean, massive respect for that, especially because of the Jose Mourinho team, you have to have Michael Essien in that team.
Yeah.
And my CDM is Makelele, it's not Kante. And I'll tell you why. I was very tough leaving Kante out. You know how much I love him.
Yeah.
It's just that he's only had 1 year as a CDM for Chelsea.
Yes, with Matic in the pivot,
With Matic in the pivot as well. And then as soon as Sarri came, that completely changed. And it's still not the norm. It's still Jorginho. Lampard still prefers Kante as sort of an Essien sort of a player as opposed to a CDM.
Yes.
And Makelele, when he came to Chelsea, he was still only 30 years old. So, 30 years old as a CDM. I mean, that's like 25 for a striker. And the fact that he had massive success. He was in Chelsea for, I think, 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
And he was the focal point of making sure that Jose Mourinho 4-3-3 works.
Absolutely.
He was the point man for the 4-3-3. He was like, Jose Mourinho literally said in as many words, he's like, if Makelele wasn't my CDM, essentially, that 4-3-3 doesn't work because the defenders pass the ball to him. And if he's marked, then Essien and Lampard are open or whoever's open. If he's not marked, then he sees the entire pitch and my offense is late then.
Right.
So the amount of impact he had for 5 seasons as that CDM of a new system of football, which took everyone by surprise, compared to even though I love him as a CDM, but only as 1 year, I would have wished if that would have been 3 years or 4 years a CDM for Kante, it would have been a tough shout-out. But I think Makelele takes that one easily.
Fair.
And then it's the front three, which is pretty standard. It's Hazard on the left. It's Didier Drogba in the center. And this guy on the right was the first lock-in player for my Chelsea squad.
Really?
First player who, as soon as I thought about doing this, I knew that one player was going to be in my team. It's the only reason I've loved Chelsea. It's the only reason I follow that club.
Damn.
And it's Gianfranco Zola.
Damn. Interesting.
Yeah. So, and because Zola is... Zola, because of his style of play... he could actually slot in anywhere in this front three. He could even slot in into that Lampard role. Yeah. So I had a free right wing open, and it just made so much sense. So yeah, that's my team, man. I think it's a Jose Mourinho 4-3-3. He would love this team. He would absolutely decimate anyone with this team, given these players were at the prime of their, or whenever they were at the prime at Chelsea.
Absolutely. I mean, it's so cool. I think you have more of an old school classic Jose Mourinho Chelsea, and I've gotten like a little bit of the 2010 and beyond, and maybe the Conte influence and the three at the back. So
some of your calls are pretty questionable.
Sure, some. All right.
Some of your calls are pretty questionable. I think the left back, right back at a three man. Ashley Cole by instinct will run. By instinct, and John Terry's probably just going to be standing there abusing both of them. He's like, yeah, meko kon defend karne aayega? And then like that only person would be like Kante.
No, so that's the thing. If Cole wants to run, let him run. Like SCN has played one or two matches for about 10-20 minutes to help
out. But you mentioned he has cover, and that technically means the right left wing back. Eden Hazard's not covering shit.
No, not on the left side. I've got Kante and SCN from the center. So either Kante goes and then SCN goes into the CDM role and Lampard's in front of him. With Robin and Hazard becoming narrower, or in attack with Kante, you know, holding that CDM, Lampard and Essien on the triangle with him, then Hazard and Robin have the ability to go up or spread out or go inside and help Drogba and Costa. So attack wise, it is just like football gasms just everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. It is, in terms of a fantasy team, it's great, but in terms of actual on pitch, I mean, come on, dude. I think my team's going to take it.
No, I mean, I
love Aspilicueta, Terry, Carvalho, Ivanovic, Essien, Makelele, Lampard, Hazard, Drogba, Zola. I mean, come on.
I mean, we should do a FIFA game and like simulate a FIFA game putting these.
Simulate a FIFA game. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Maybe that works.
Yeah.
All right. But pretty interesting take you had. I was expecting something pretty standard. It's Jose 4-3-3 from you.
Right.
But I like this Jose Conte mashup.
So my manager is Antonio Jose Conte Mourinho.
Yeah, that works. Anyway, so yeah, that wraps up this episode. Let us know what you guys thought of our teams. Next week, we're going to be doing a roundup of football, which is officially, apart from the German League, we had our first game in the La Liga, Sevilla Real Betis last night. Yeah. And the Italian Coppa Italia starting tonight, that's Friday. So we're going to have a lot more football for you guys next week, along with our Juventus team of the decades. And I'm curious to see what you come up with there, because my team's good to go and I'm pretty happy with it.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's a mammoth task. We were talking off mic also, and Juventus has had some really stellar, classic, old school players to then this revival post the scandal and everything. So Juventus...
I think pre-scandal is when they had a lot of great players as well. For example, Antonio Conte was club captain until 2004, I want to say.
Right.
So there's he could be in that team as well. So Juve is going to be a lot more research. I think there were a lot more players to sort of comb through.
Yes.
So however that's much time you spent on Chelsea, I'm pretty sure you'll be spending on Juve. Also because I'm arguably more familiar with Juve than you are.
Right.
So I'm looking forward to that one. Anyways, that wraps up this episode for the Football Corner. Hope you guys enjoyed, and we'll catch you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.